been conflict is being recorded.
Okay.
Okay.
Does that help us at all?
It sounds fine to me.
Yeah, it sounds okay to me too. I seem to be getting a little bit of an echo in my ear. I'm gonna try to call back in. The recording started, Mr. Oliver. We're all good to go. I'm gonna hang up and call back in and see if perhaps my line is for the challenger.
Before you do that, Toby, who all from on the inner circle? I heard Eric and I.
Mike Pace here.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
Yeah, we've got a bunch. We've got Paul and Zach Miller, and we heard from Paul Druschkow. Right now we've got about 20, 21 or so on the line. So we've got a pretty good, pretty decent quorum so far.
Hey, Toby, it's James O'Connor, too, here.
Hey, James, fantastic. Hey, James. Good.
Okay. let's try to make this as interactive as possible, but... Eric and hi, I heard you there first. So give us 3 points of feedback. One, what some of the takeaways you had from the weekend in Keystone, and what you've done with that so far.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. One of the most vivid ones was when we scheduled. The conferences that we scheduled another day where we're not back in the middle of business. So when we get.
Sorry about that. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so one was that when we get back, that we have a day where we're just continuing to work on the stuff from the conference, not back in the regular routine. I think we'll be more productive. The second one was that your format this time was very, very helpful in terms of application. And I don't know why. I mean, I don't know if it was just we weren't listening before but we felt like we could really apply a lot of the stuff.
Well, that's good feedback. Why do you think that was? What specifically was helpful?
One of the things I thought was Jesus in my voice.
I think your cell phone is pretty clipped, or if you're on speaker, something's weird.
Let me take that. One of the things I thought that really helped out was when you really went into detail on the numbers and the details and the technical aspects of like what you were doing, specifically as far as the price point. It just the numbers, and then it allowed us to fill in the gap. And then you explained it, and then we started putting our twist on there, I guess. If that makes sense.
Yeah. So you like the thing that is my natural tendency that I try to mitigate because most people's eyes gloss over. I have a tendency to spreadsheet it out and throw out all the numbers and walk it all through on a legal pad and I don't know or on the whiteboard. I don't know how many times people have said to me, "Why do you do that?" Because nobody gets it or is following you. But you're saying that was what was helpful.
Oh yeah.
Because it made it reality instead of abstract.
Yeah.
And the other part. Hold on, let me take it off. The other part that makes it. I'm off speaker and still. Hold on, let me try to find it on the phone. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
The other part was. The vivid, like the two 13-year-olds up speaking was very vivid for us in terms of what's possible to create with the students and then the upgrade program. It was like we're really just vivid. If we could have our students like be able to speak and be like that's invaluable. That's priceless, and it was that became very vivid.
Good, good. So from your and one of the things you said was very helpful to you, which I couldn't agree more, is that you set aside a day where you didn't just jump back in the fray, but you spend time recapping the ideas and concepts and then putting together an action plan. Is that right? You still there?
And I don't know, you know, the other thing is I think that staying in the conversation for a year just allows, it's just like martial arts, right? I mean, what I see as a black belt and what I saw as a white belt are not the same thing. So I think that just staying in this conversation over time, it provides a level of vividness that's not available as a novice.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Those are the three things.
In your recap that you guys went through, what are some of the things that you came about that you're specifically implementing at your end?
So, well, they're doing construction as we speak next door on the build out. So we got it launched. The second part is we're doing the 3-tier programming with the upgrade and renewal system, each of our separate programs, and the separate pricing with that. So we started the build out. We started a public relations campaign of when we released the build out and the new programming and the new pricing. And we started laying out the dates for when that's released and our new pricing. So we're actually finally launching all the stuff you guys have been coaching us for.
Yeah. So you fought slowly and are now ready to implement fast.
That's correct.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. And give us an outline of what you intend to launch, and what the timeline is for it.
So the construction will be complete by February 1, and so we're doing a email and letter campaign, releasing the program, about the build out and what's available, and then we have. But we have a couple of questions for you around the 3 tiers of programming. But we were going to have, the introductory program. We wanted to price it in at $149, and then we were going to do the renewal process for levels 2 and 3 in that 6 to 8 week period. And so my question for you was, what literally is different between your level 2 and level 3 program in terms of what the customer receives?
Well, there's a variety of ways of implementing it, but what we do on the franchise side is we basically structure the classes for an hour. What we call Master Club is 45 minutes of that hour. The leadership stays for an extra 15 minutes. So mostly they're getting an extra 15 minutes twice a week as far as the physical time. Now we do periodic leadership-only seminars and a variety of other little things. But from the standpoint of what we're predominantly selling is that it's an extra 15 minutes of content twice a week. Now, in practice, what they're doing is they are, and we tell parents that, first we teach good interdependent teamwork, and then we teach small team leadership, and then we teach teaching skills, and then we teach public speaking skills. And so as they go through the process, that's the different levels of what we're doing with the student. But we have, like, the Maxwell books. So they have the Maxwell book and the workbook, and all the students are supposed to have that and bring the workbook to class with them. And then we'll do two or three minute mat chat on whatever the lesson is. So like in one of the lessons that I pull off the top of my head is the law of the chain. And so, you know, any team is only as good as the weakest link. And, you know, so you have a little lesson plan that goes with that. And then the rest of the time they're doing some piece of curriculum that truthfully we picked out for it to be like fun and cool that the other people aren't getting to learn, right? So the leadership people are learning some additional physical curriculum, but really it's not about they're learning an additional Taekwondo form or something. It's just like we added a part of it as a schema just because it's easy to teach and it's fun. And if I stand on the sideline and I'm not getting to do that, I get lust for wanting to do that. If I'm doing it, it's fun. So a lot of times it'll be they're doing a little bit of a schema or some other thing that is just fun to learn that they enjoy doing that they didn't get to do in the regular class if they weren't in the leadership program, plus a little lesson. And what you don't want to do is you don't want to end up sitting everybody down and lecturing for 15 or 20 minutes. Because it doesn't matter whether they're an adult or a kid, that puts them to sleep. But it's fine to give them a textbook, give them some, a small number of written assignments, give them an assignment each week to be working on at home, and then have a little discussion in class with it.
Okay. And then what is it they're receiving in the master's then?
Well, you see, in practical terms, we started with Black Belt Club and then just, made it Masters Club. But the first level is all about setting the goal to be a black belt. And then there's a higher level of program that overlays additional content to it. Does that make sense? So if you think in terms of what our original definition of Master Club was they were enrolled to second degree black belt. And then we overlaid leadership as additional content on top of that. And, of course, you guys were your crazy, it takes you 92 years to be a black belt thing. You got to figure out how to piece it together, right? But the first piece of it is about, and for all of us, it's about goal setting first. So it's about I'm not training month to month but for a year at a time, but I'm committed to truthfully accomplish at a high level. And then at the next level, it's about there's an overlay of curriculum. And the way we described it to begin with is we said here's the stuff that we used to teach to third and fourth degree and fifth degree black belts and our full-time staff, and we've figured out a way to chunk it appropriately so we can teach it at as low as gold, orange, and green belt level. So now the leadership program is that high-level material that has been chunked down so that you can accomplish it by the time you get to your black belt.
Okay, so you, and Mr. Oliver, you said that the first was the goal setting, and the second was overlay of agreement. Was that correct?
Well, no, just additional curriculum. Additional level of accomplishment, right? So, and it could be some physical curriculum and some, additional skill set. Where I think most people go wrong in the industry is trying to make it all about, you're learning this style and now you learn this style, or you're learning this piece of the style and now you learn this other stuff. If it's all about physical, it doesn't matter whether it's adult male 32 years old or 12-year-old child. If it's all about just physical curriculum, it's not very empowering in most cases. It has to be more about life skills, accomplishing at a higher level, goal setting, having a higher level of confidence, and you've got to relate it to for a child, how they're going to do it in school, with an adult, how it's going to impact their career. And there are exceptions. I mean, you have a small number of people who are very focused on, being an Olympian or being a UFC fighter or something like that. For those guys, you can have a physical track that's different. But I would also recommend for them, because, as you know from your own experience, a huge amount of success in that is mental. So I would suggest that it be about mental toughness training and about goal setting and fortitude and all of those things as well.
Yeah, Mr. Oliver? if you let me jump on that for a second, Eric, I think the way I like to define this, especially for the guys that are kind of at a lower level of performance in the business with the performers, is if you almost think about it this way, and this is an overgeneralization, but if you almost think about completely separating the physical from the non-physical, it makes it more clear to see it, and it certainly isn't that way in practice in the school. You're teaching it, you know, with the physical, right? But the way Master Oliver explained it, that really made sense to me, that I think really helps a lot of the peak performers think about it, is if you go back to look at Stephen Covey's maturity continuum, right? And here's kind of how we pitch it, kind of, sort of, is the Master Club is sort of like, as Covey describes in The Seven Habits, moving from dependence to first independence, and second to interdependence. So, Mrs. Jones, this is going to help Johnny in his career become a good employee, right? Someone who can go get the job done when he's asked without having to be, you know, overly managed. And then the interdependence stage helps him be a productive member of a team. Now, the leadership program takes all of those skills and takes it to the next level, where we're then taking Johnny out as an employee or a team member role and putting him in a direct leadership role, first starting with one-on-one individual leadership, second with small group leadership, and then third with executive leadership, leading other leaders. Now, what this is going to help Johnny do when he graduates from high school or college is to be not just an employee or a member of a team, but in fact to learn how to lead the team, lead the individual members of the team, and then lead the organization. So which one, Mrs. Jones, would you think Johnny would benefit most from? So, I mean, putting those terms, you completely separate the financial and commitment argument from the kicks and punches I get to go do. But instead, really, what my overarching objective for being in this thing is. You know what I'm saying? So if you kind of put it in those terms, I think it really helps a parent see the big difference in the programs rather than saying, and you certainly never say this, but it's an extra 15 minutes two times a week, right? That's not a very empowering concept, right? But the second thing I would just, I'm sorry?
It doesn't sound like much.
Exactly. Articulated that way, exactly right. It really commoditizes it. And what you really want to do is decommoditize it, right? So then the second thing I think I would say is also keep in mind, guys, that we only use, and when I say we, I mean in the model that obviously we're using with franchises and that we know to be very effective at moving people to a higher level program, we're only using that Master Club, which is that sort of lower level tier, as a fallback position. That's not really like a marketed thing, right? Our objective is not to, and I think you said this a little earlier, and it perhaps is an area of concern. I don't think what you want to do is give them two options, right? That's really not it. You're not asking them to sort of make a decision between two choices. What you're really doing is showing them that there is a path to black belt and beyond. Now let's sit down and discuss which path makes the most sense for you. But it's not really about, okay, we have this program and this program, which one do you like? It's more like, let's sit down and talk about what Johnny's needs are. Here's how our program works. You know, dependence, interdependence, one-on-one leadership, group leadership, executive leadership. Now, what's the best for Johnny? You know what I mean?
That's awesome.
We're not on the mission to move people into Master Club. Our mission is to move them into leadership. If for some, and you guys were up in Denver, right? You guys were out at Keystone. How many black cops did you see in the black belt examination? I counted three, right? So like 130 people there, three of them were in Master Club, everybody else was in leadership, right? That's kind of what our objective is.
Yeah, and to say it differently, the blue tops are leadership, the black top is Master Club.
Right.
Typically, the reason for having two levels is just so you have a financial fallback position. Because you want to start pushing that leadership tuition to the point where, I mean, my design intellectually was that I wanted to be where we ended up with about half of them in Master Club and about half of them in leadership, because I wanted the price point for leadership to end up disqualifying a fair number of people. And in practical terms, over the years, we've ended up where it's 90 or 95% in leadership. What that means is, even though it's $100 more a month from Master Club, it's what everybody wants. The other thing it means is that our leadership program isn't priced too low. So, So, you know, rather than it be $359 a month, it needs to be $497 a month.
Matt Oliver, something I think that you did create, and perhaps it was by accident, but something I think that is really useful, I know for a lot of the performer guys who do a launch, when you launch the new program, you really want and need fast momentum. You want to put a lot of people into it right away. And what occurs to me is it becomes the social norm. Right. So if you were to be a new student,
that was by design all the way back to the early 80s.
Exactly. So when a new student walks in, that's their expectation.
I refer to it as the bandwagon effect early on. Is if you get everybody looking around and it feels to them like everybody else has already done this thing, then it's the right thing to do. On the other hand,
right.
If they look around and there's just like out of 30 people, one other one that did it, they say, well, most people aren't doing this. It's not the right thing. And so, that's the great opportunity, but the challenge of something like a different color uniform that goes with it is if you now have a blue top deal for the high level program or whatever you choose for it to be, and nobody in the school is in the thing, then it worked against you. On the other hand, if you have the blue top and all, every class I come to, somebody else is getting their blue top, and when I look around the school, pretty much everybody has that. It's your example of if you look at one of our advanced classes, it'll be 90%, 95% in blue tops, and maybe 10% in black tops. So then the social proof all the way around is that's the place that everybody wants to be.
Yeah, and if you extend the impact of that to a new student when they walk in the school, that other thing, that blue top thing, becomes the social norm. So the new student comes in, they go through their introductory process, they get their nice white uniform, they walk out on the floor ready to take their first few classes. Well, the social expectation, the social norm in the culture is that, well, eventually you're going to be in the leadership program. It just becomes part of the thing. And that, if you took away everything else, right? If you took away all the cool direct mail stuff and all the, sales presentations and PowerPoints and all that, if you took away all that stuff, right? But what you just had was the culture and the social norm that's the expected outcome. All right, look, most people just do it. That's what they expect. If you look around your neighborhood and see what kind of cars are in your neighborhood, I bet your car is just about the same as theirs, right? Because that's the social expectation. You know, when you drive into the country club, if you don't have a Beamer or the Mercedes, then you just don't fit in, right?
Yeah.
It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah. Anyway, so, Eric, going back to your question, does that answer that question? Is that helpful?
Yeah, that's very helpful because we were trying, when we were pricing, we were trying to figure out if you motivate, do you give a discount for being in the highest level at as a motivational tool, or do you kind of just tier it and then the actual programming will fulfill on that without any question?
Well, you want to go towards the vast majority of your sales efforts, if you want to think about it that way, is aimed at the higher level program. The other program is just a financial fallback for those who, you still want them to be committed to train to black belt and to achieve in one thing or another. They just can't swing the difference. And, in our case over the years, when we put somebody in Master Club, it's only been until, their finances clear up and they can eventually upgrade themselves. And sometimes it's said just that explicitly, and other times it's implicit. But it's not because they don't want to be any other thing. It's because they can't swing it right now. And it's not sequential. I mean, what we did for many years is we renewed them to Black Belt Club and then later on put them in Master Club because Master Club was in the second degree Black Belt. And an interesting discovery was when I started just offering a Master Club and Black Belt Club at the same time, so one was the first degree second Black Belt, the other was the second degree Black Belt, but it was just easy to sell them straight to second degree Black Belt, which in our case was 7 years. And so, really, it didn't make much of a sales difference. So we just started putting everybody directly into the higher level program, then killed Black Belt Club and created leadership with the same phenomenon.
Okay, that's awesome.
It's also why the next thing you'll want to do is you want to put everybody into, you know, the higher level program, but then realize that 20% of them is there is a market for people who want to pay $9.97 a month or $12.97 a month or $15.97 a month. It's the example of what I got Lloyd Irving to do several years ago now. We got him to do he's got, I think it's now $12.97 and $15.97 a month programming. In his case, he's doing it for the guys who really are serious about becoming fighters. So it's the next level up, the ones who want to ultimately become professional fighters. There may be a niche for you for that as well. You know, in our case, it was about having a higher level of personal coaching and support with the student, rather than they wanted to be a competitor.
Well, by the way, there's actually two other things too. I think number one is there's a sub niche of people in their environment of people who want to train like a professional fighter, but not actually be that, right? So
there's the executive group.
Exactly.
And it's not like Jeff Smith has always done over the years. For I'm not sure he still does. He may still have that going. But for a long time, he had a bunch of Redskins players. And so he was doing a high-level, almost professional kickboxing program, and many of them were recently retired, right? So they're kind of high-end executive athletes who wanted to do something that was cool, and he traded on the world champion thing. So now they were paying him like $1,200 an hour to do that type of stuff. So you're always going to have the group that, I'm a 38-year-old executive and want to do something that's cool as long as you don't tap me out and punch me in the nose. So as long as you don't get into a personal training trap, right, so you don't get into, for $100 an hour, you're working with them one-on-one, but you can create something to that level of people as well that will, the rule of thumb is you always have 20% of your students who will do whatever it is you ask them to do at the highest level if they can afford it. And then depending upon what your demographics is, my rule of thumb is you probably have half of them that can afford something fairly expensive and want to do it, half of them that want to do it but just wouldn't be able to do the finances.
And then my other question was for the master's and leadership program. So your leader, what was your pricing on those two, and with both monthly or with the cash out?
Well, I'd be happy to email this over to you, by the way. Maybe I'll just email. You've got to teach me how to do attachments and infusion.
Or just put up on the discussion forum.
Yeah, that's better. Do you have the current 2012 My High Credit Price Sheet?
I don't have the 2012. I have the previous ones. I don't have the new one yet.
Well, let's give them the new one. What we're basically going to do is go to $247 a month for new enrollments, $297 for Master Club, and $497 for Leadership. And then I don't have the cash price out of my head. I'm not looking at it. But typically the cash price, the presentation has been that the discount is the equivalent of 18% APR plus an additional 20%. And the reason for that is most of the big cash deals we've ever gotten are on credit cards, right? So you give them a rationale for putting it on their credit card where they're spending 10, 12, 18% on the credit card. But and the rationale for putting it on the credit card is twofold. One is it's a much more flexible payment plan. So with a credit card, some months they can pay, $100 minimum payment, and the other month they can, they can pay half the balance if they want to without any problem. But the other thing is we're going to give you a big enough cash discount that we're going to cover the interest on the credit card plus, an additional discount. And it gives them a rationale to do that. And by the way, if you haven't ever done big deals on credit cards, there's a lot of merchant account problems that go with it, and Jeff Call, who we've lined up to work with all of you guys, has that handled. So basically, We have language that goes in the contract that they're paying us for a year, and the balance, whatever the term is basically added free to the end of it. The other thing is he's got a good working relationship with the risk management department, so that, you know, once they see those things come through, because I, you know, Lloyd had one time, I got him to do all this stuff, and then he had the merchant account hold $70,000 and hold it for 6 months. And we've had them where you do a $27,000 deal, the merchant, you know, the merchant won't process it. And the irony is when they do that, they hold the credit off of the customer's card, but they just don't give you the money. So if you haven't done that before with your merchant account, I would suggest you go set up a new account with Jeff Cole.
Okay.
I think all the information for him is up on the website.
Yeah, we called him last week. And then the last thing, so two things on your on the initial registration fee, do you put any discount on that? And I guess that was the question, or does that just stay static?
Well, when you talk about discount, here's two pieces of it. You know, piece number one is nobody ever does anything they don't want to do because it's cheaper today, right? And so you've got to keep the discounting in the right frame of reference. The only reason that you present anything as a discount is for time pressure. So if I tell you, here's the cost of the new program, and you can do it anytime between now and next July. Well, pretty much everybody chooses next July, because why make a decision today I can put off, and why write a check today that I can put off? On the other hand, if you tell me that here's the program you want to do, as long as you finalize it by December 17th, it's this amount of money, therefore you're going to save $3,000. And, you know, by extrapolation, after December 17th, it goes up by $3,000. Then it's the time pressure to get me to make a decision and get me to do something. And that's very important. So it's very important always to give them a deadline. And give them a deadline either that the last day that you're ever going to be able to do this thing is this day. Or give them a deadline that, you know, you're enrolled for a year, you can do this thing anytime between now and the end of the year, but in practical terms, the time to make a decision to train the black belt is now. Therefore, we give you a $3,000 discount to finalize by the 17th. You've got to have a deadline. You've got to have a compelling reason to finalize by that deadline. And it is the challenge. You enroll them for a year. You've got to make sure in the enrollment conference you prep them for the fact that that's not the whole thing, that there's another level. But then when you're having the conversation with them, there's got to be a big compelling reason to finalize it.
Okay, great, great.
And, hey, Toby, I didn't hear. Is Carol Middleton on the call with us, too?
I didn't hear her at the beginning, but it doesn't mean she's not here now.
If she is, how does she unmute herself?
Yeah, star 6, you can unmute yourself.
Yeah. Eric and I, for 2011, what do you figure your end of the year gross will be at your main school?
For this year?
Yeah, by the close of the year.
Well, actually, we meet with the account on the 10th, so, but I'm anticipating, I mean, we haven't been tracking the numbers as closely as we'd like. I mean, we were hoping to be in the 900, but somewhere in there.
Okay. Well, if you'll do the renewal blitz thing right, you'll be at 1.2.
Okay.
Because you have huge amounts of opportunity sitting there. And it's got to be frantic energy, and it's got to be talking to everybody 7 times, and it's a Herculean process, and by the time you break for Christmas, you want everybody to take a week off because they're going to be so exhausted. But you could clearly finish the year at 1.2 rather than at 900.
Okay.
Just food for thought.
Great.
Well, good. What? Go ahead.
The only other thing, Mr. Messenholder, was one more question. You know, we were putting in the attendance card program, and what's legal in terms of us, their information on that card, and can someone else pick it up, or there's some limitations there?
Well, not much. Not much. I mean, you know, arguably kids and adults, there's a little bit of different issue. You know, in practical terms, if you have the parents fill out the card and explain to them what's going to go on, you know, if they choose not to want to have their mailing address on the card or that kind of stuff, it's certainly fine. Because you're right, it is public access. You know, what's legal? I mean, that would be a state-by-state issue. And, you know, around the U.S., I've never run into anything that's much of an issue. Canada has some really interesting privacy laws that get a little bit trickier when it comes to kids. For instance, you can't buy a mailing list of homes with kids in them in Canada as easily as you can in the U.S. But I've never ended up with an issue with that. But what we do at the outset is, you know, it's a white card, we explain to the parent or explain to the student how it works, and then have them fill it out. And occasionally it'll come up, like we've got, you know, one gal who, I don't know who the hell she works for, but some ultra-secret government agency, and, you know, we even had a little video clip with her in it on online, and she freaked out and had to have us take us down because it's going to, you know, disrupt her triple top secret security clearance. Occasionally you come up with something, but I've never ended up with that as an issue. But I would just, you know, at the beginning, just explain it to them, have them fill it out, and then if you get any pushback from the parent on any piece of it, it's certainly fine. I mean, you always have your records. You can, you know, go to the file and pull up the address or the phone number. It's not like you need that information on there.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah. I'm sorry, talking
over you,
go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying we're pretty excited. It's coming together, so.
Good. Yeah, I mean, Texas is luckily a lot like Colorado. You don't end up with a lot of that kind of issues. You know, contracts are easy. You don't have a lot of restrictions on that. You start getting into Pennsylvania, Maryland, Virginia, New York, and certainly California. All of a sudden, that's where you have more. Well, good. Guys, you're getting ready to be famous because we've got the Toby, I haven't gotten the I've gotten the stack of the magazines. I haven't gotten the one in my mailbox yet, but they've mailed, haven't they?
Yeah, they're in the mail stream now.
Yeah. So
they could actually be hitting in the Texas area in the next day or two.
I would imagine. But yeah, you've got the big cover story. So we've got your lovely visage, that's the right word, on the cover of the magazine, and luckily some beautiful artwork on the school. So
while we've got everybody on the call, we really need as many good photos and artwork as you've got of yourself and the school. Just send it all over to me. You know.
Yeah.
I'll email around my Dropbox link, but really we need good quality photos, high resolution, 300 DPI, you know, 12 megapixels, as good as you can get, right? And Eric and I happen to have some really good stuff laying around that worked really well for us. So as much of that stuff as you guys can send over to me, please do.
Well, and let's talk philosophically. I mean, our mission is to elevate the entire industry by starting at the top. And really what we're looking at doing is highlighting as many $250,000 net, $500,000 single schools, and multi-$1 million single schools, and multi-$1 million multiple schools as possible. And clearly, you know, our mission with NAPNA is if we don't attract them, to create them. And, you know, we're certainly doing a little bit of both. And especially appropriate for the inner circle is one of the things that you guys can all be doing is looking around the industry, and you should know it's few and far between, but looking around the industry to find people who look like, not, you know, physically, but look like your operation that we can bring into to the inner circle and support everybody. So, you know, the more more schools we bring in that are $5, $10, $15 million multiple school operations or $1.2, $1.5, $2 million single school operations, the more we all benefit. So, but the purpose of the artwork is, of course, is to highlight your success stories. And if that makes you a little famous in the industry, that's a double-edged sword, but hopefully you have some reasons for that to be useful for you. For our purposes, is to expand people's worldview of what's possible, and obviously to encourage them to work with us to have the kind of results that many of you have had in the past month or year. But good. So, hi, and Eric, and everybody chip in. Anybody has any specific questions? But a few of the thoughts on implementation strategies that you came out of the last meeting.
We just went back, you know, we went through our notes, and we started with, you know, the staff, of course, the staff training. We came back, we had a staff meeting, and really, you know, what was important to us is that the entire staff is on board and totally enrolled inside of, you know, the pricing, the programming, and so we started from that, and because then the staff, hadn't really happened till now, but the staff's really on board with the new pricing structure and what we're doing. So I think that with that in place, we really have a lot of power there.
Well, yeah, that you can't underestimate the necessity for that. And and by the way, three of your guys were at the little seminar that we did in Houston. It was. I have to say it was an interesting audience because we had a wide range of closed-minded broke people and your guys and one other. Help me out with the name from New Mexico here, Toby. The drill sergeant and...
the drill sergeant? Wasn't Ted.
No, from New Mexico, our newest Beat Performer members. Fabulous couple. They were there working with everybody. Anyway, probably on the call. If you're on the call, chip in. That's a rule of thumb, by the way. Every time we ever did a big event for Mile High Karate, so we had 3,000 people in the audience. I always had a handler, and the handler was told, you know, your only role is to keep me from looking stupid. And rule number one is you got to make sure that, you know, if somebody who's standing there that I've known for 20 years, that I get their name right.
there's actually a. I was just watching a thing on Newt Gingrich the other day, and he has, you know, one of his staff guys is the same thing. He's like, make sure I know the name of every damn congressman that I've worked with for the last 20 years. You know.
Oh yeah. Well, you always see that, you know, the president. They always have the one guy, you know, standing behind him, whispering to him the names of all the people he knows, but, you know, forgets and he doesn't. But your guys were very engaged at that seminar.
Because they came back just glowing. It was a huge confidence booster for them and just really seeing that, and that made a huge difference.
Good. Well, it's the fear, because usually it works the opposite way. Is, you know, the same problem we had in Atlanta is in Houston, Atlanta, the only people who had a clue, which I guess we should take as a compliment, but the only people who had a clue were longtime members, and the ones who were at the highest level were Inner Circle or Peak Performer members. And, you know, the problem sometimes is when you guys show up at those regional things, is, you know, it's hard to make it valuable for you, because the vast majority of the industry, either through, you know, hopefully what we saw in your association, but we're also actively attracting people like you, is you tend to be way ahead of everybody else. You know, a lot of you guys on the call have been in those little regional seminars where you saw that. A lot of guys sit around with their arms crossed or their brain turned off. So it's always a challenge. But anyway, so let's shift on. Who has some other questions or follow-ups from Keystone? A couple of you didn't make it. For any clarity, let's kind of expand from that. Toby, they have to hit star 6 to get live.
Yeah, that's right. To be unmuted is star 6 on your phone.
Do we know if Dave Edmond is on the call? Dave, are you out there somewhere? Apparently not. The one of the things that I found useful, and let's get some feedback on it, but we had a whole group of schools in Keystone that have just been knocking it dead as far as numbers of new students. And I know we talked to the thing that I actually found the most valuable was Sasha Williams' kid talking about how he put people in the that open house. His first time I remember in quite a few years that I was avidly taking notes and trying to make sure it was recorded. But I thought his presentation for why an essence of leadership is whether you influence people to do things and then you get them into an event like that, I thought that was fabulous. The other thing that we got a chance to do is really less so than in July, but we had a chance to really go through an awful a broad range of marketing ideas. Everything from what Robert had been doing to Sasha had been doing to Dave Inman to Eric and Hi. We spent a lot more time on internet stuff last time and did a lot of good stuff with Joe Berube and you guys. But I found that extremely valuable. And of course, this is an interesting time of year because it's a time when you really want to spend some time coming up into the holidays reviewing, reflecting, and recapping. You also want to get an opportunity with your staff, hopefully over a Christmas dinner somewhere, to really get a focused, high-level, enthusiastic, empowering goal for the new year. And we need to make sure we're pulling all the triggers today for the first quarter marketing plan, because clearly everybody has a mission of anywhere from 100 to 300 new students in the first quarter. And so, you know, for each, if you're a multi-school operator, you know, worst case, I would be shooting for 100 new students in January, February, March. In many cases, a lot more than that. So it's very, you know, so it's a very important time to be ready to pull the trigger and to focus on that.
Excuse me, I've got a question for James O'Connor.
Go ahead, James.
I'm in an interesting position here. I'm going to be relocating my school.
Yep.
And so I think it could be an exciting time for type of grand, like a grand opening or something to that effect. I was just curious how what your thoughts are and how I could take advantage of that in this new year.
Well, yeah, you know, let me give you an example. Years ago, and I hate to give attribution, but it was my then ex-wife's idea. And I had the interesting opportunity for a while to have my ex-wife work for me for about 3 years. Her new husband worked for me for a while as program director, and my girlfriend worked for my ex-wife. So, I'll give credit where credit is due. It's her idea, and you know, somewhere along the line, and many years ago, we had five schools. She said something to the effect of, "Well, if we got the numbers down in the schools, why don't we just, you know, you're really good at grand openings, why don't we just have a grand opening for them all?" And it seemed to me stupid at the time, probably given the source, but I thought about it a little bit, and it turned out to be a brilliant idea. And we ended up doing in five schools, 479 enrollments in 6 weeks. By having a grand opening for schools that I think at the time had mostly been open an average of 12 years. And so we just decided to have a big grand opening blitz. And by the way, and spent a bunch of money doing it. So I think we spent about $100,000. But you know, you don't have five schools, nor do you have a bunch of kind of lethargic employees, which is what our problem was at the time, not doing much to promote them. But if you take this concept and you have essentially a grand opening blitz as you relocate, and in one of the ways to think about the grand opening thing is think about how much marketing you would do normally now that we're coaching you along at it in a month. And
okay.
do six months worth of it in 6 weeks.
Okay.
And, you know, it sounds simplistic, but if you just rev everything up and every penny that comes in, you put it into marketing for 6 or 8 weeks. And then you go and on all the community outreach stuff, you do 6 months worth in 6 weeks. And on all of the other types of stuff, like if you're going to do rack cards and lead boxes, instead of doing 100 of them, you do 1,000 of them. If that's even possible in your area. But you just think in terms of, you know, what would my marketing activity look like in the first 6 months of the year, and now let's go do all of that in 6 weeks.
Okay, that makes sense.
Just go into high energy. The other application of that, by the way, is, which also applies to your situation, James. So glad I spent about 45 minutes arguing about your situation this morning.
Which is weird because, like, we didn't disagree about anything. So, you know.
No, a lot of times it's just semantics. But the other piece of it, or the other application I was going to say, is, you know, over the years we've dealt with occasionally the guy who's going to come in and open across the street or open in the immediate area. And you know, 90%, 95% of the time is somebody who's not a threat.
Right.
But occasionally there's the opposite. And so, you know, I dealt with it with the Kovars, with Tiger Shulman, with them kind of battling back and forth, and similar situations where there's somebody else who really has a clue that you're worrying about having an impact. And then you do the same thing. What you do is you target what their opening date is. Then you just do 3 or 6 months worth of your marketing in 6 weeks and just, you know, bury them. And we've done that a bunch of times. I had, years ago, a staff member who was trying to open down the street and take a bunch of people with him. So I just took what normally would have been a six-month advertising budget and put it into 6 weeks. And every time you turned around, there was something in the mailbox or in the newspaper or in the Valpak ad or on the street signs. And, you know, he just couldn't ever get any traction. So, you know, the place lasted until the rent started. So in your case, James, you have both elements of that, right?
Correct.
So you really want to just physically be exhausted, and financially, you know, the whole renewablist concept right now is perfect, because if you can suck in an extra $70,000 and put 60 of it into marketing, is suddenly you're at 200 students in January, plus you've got no competitive threat because you've just sucked up all the intros out of the area for the next 6 months, and you're off to the races.
Gotcha.
Does that help?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the other question is, do you change the way you word your marketing, or to, I don't want to necessarily hurt your opponent, but yes.
No. And in fact, you just completely ignore that there's anybody else in the market.
Okay.
You know, go all the way back. There was a book that I really liked. It's probably 30 years, got to be 30, 32 years old now. It's called Positioning. And I think the subtitle was The Battle for Your Mind. And it's a marketing book that's still in publication, last I looked. But it was but one of the examples they used at the time was when IBM launched the PC. And when IBM launched the PC, there were innumerable players in the market. It was Apple. But there were a huge number. There was Osborne, there was Commodore, and there was Atari, and there was Sinclair, and Tandy or Radio Shack. But there was a huge number of markets in a huge number of people who had already done personal computers. And so when IBM did it, which, you know, really is what launched Microsoft, but when IBM did it, IBM went into the market and they didn't advertise that the IBM computer was better than anything else in the market. They just went out and advertised why you want a personal computer. And they had the little Charlie Chaplin character in the things, and what they were trying to do is make computers feel personal and lovable. And all of their advertising was about why you should use a personal computer, why you need a personal computer. None of it is about why they're better than anybody else's. And, you know, my entire strategy for years and years and years in Denver was exactly that, is I never tried to compare me to anybody else, and it didn't take very long till I was 20 times bigger than anybody else anyway. But the principle was, if I could just go out there and market why you should be doing martial arts, and then drive them to, in this case, you know, at that time, just the phone number, but drive them to, you know, responding to us. What I knew from talking to other school owners in the area is when I was marketing heavy, everybody did better. And when I backed off my marketing, their traffic went down. So, but I was doing that intentionally. Is I didn't, you know, my biggest problem was never that there was somebody else in the area I was worried about as a competitor. It was always that they're all so crappy that, you know, that they were hurting my reputation. But, you know, I did all the marketing was just and only about, you know, why you should do martial arts, not about, you know, how we were better than anybody else. Because as soon as you compare yourself to somebody else, is, you know, then you're giving them credibility.
Okay.
And, you know, in our industry, there may be the occasional time that, you know, positioning against somebody else. So, you know, if I was a school in Jacksonville and I'm competing with Bill Clark, or I'm a school in New York City, I'm competing with Tiger Shulman, I may need to acknowledge, you know, the big guy in that market, or if I was in, you know, in Colorado. But the reality is, in most cases, you know, you don't really have any competition other than what's between your own ears. You know, certainly, you know, like Eric and Hyde, they don't need to worry about what anybody else is doing in Houston. Robert doesn't need to worry about what anybody else is doing in Hudson Valley. Sean doesn't need to worry about what anybody else is doing in Bermuda. You can go through the list. So really, 99% of the time, you know, don't worry about it. It's irrelevant.
Okay. All right, makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah. The only place you need to worry about, you know, this competitor is the fact that, you know, it's your landlord moving into the same space. So,
right.
You know, you've got to make sure that none of your current or former students confuse that with you. The other thing you've got to make sure you do is make sure that everybody in the community know that you've gone somewhere else.
Okay.
And, you know, and even once you relocate, I would have rack cars, lead boxes, rent bus benches, have little real estate signs. I would have, you know, the mile radius around the former location all just ringed with grand opening notice and relocation notice about your school, so that nobody doesn't get that message.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. Well, good. Any other questions or feedback? I'd love to hear some implementation feedback from our recent event in Keystone. So, who has some other exciting implementation strategies or some questions? It's always interesting, whether it's a small group or a large group, you always get the thundering silence when martial artists are asked to speak in public.
That's right.
This is Jonathan. I was trying not to pick up because I monopolized a lot of time last time.
No, you're fine, Jonathan. Jump in.
Well, I have a question, and I'll just share with you what's been going on with me since I got back.
Yeah.
So the question is, I got a mailer from you talking about the Inner Circle curriculum, and there were some dates on there. When we left Breckenridge there, it was pretty close to being confirmed. Are we still pretty close to being confirmed, or are we confirmed now for those dates?
Well, let me go through the list. The one that I'm having the most difficulty with from the hotel standpoint. And, of course, when we left Keystone, we had shifted from Miami to Orlando. So the one that I'm, frankly, still having the most trouble with is the February hotel. Now, the February dates are firm. Because, I mean, you know, if the Grand Floridian, where I hope to have it, isn't available, then, or the Yacht Club isn't available, there's innumerable properties that are adjacent to Disney that have plenty of meeting space. So okay. We're not going to have a problem. We're not going to have a problem with the date. It's the specific hotel.
That doesn't bother me.
I'm
just doing my calendar for you.
Yeah, the date for West Point is we're penciled in on their calendar, and so that one's fine. The date for the marketing boot camp is fine. We've got a contract on that hotel, and we're all set to go. The date for the fall event for Inner Circle was was centered around October 4th, which was that Disney workshop I want us to go to. And so we're penciled in with that, but we don't have a hotel nailed down yet. I'm working
okay.
on. I'm hoping for the October to be the what is it they call it, the Grand California or the California. It's right there on Disney property at the Jade School facility in downtown Disney. And I'm hoping for the Grand Floridian in February, but they haven't confirmed either one of those. It's, you know, Disney is incredibly good at customer service on the business side behind the scenes. They move slower than any organization I've seen.
Hmm.
In part, they do it because they can. They have such a, you know, such an incredible power on all these things that, you know, they're very selective on what they'll put in, and they're very concerned about how it's going to fit in the mix of everything else. And so, you know, so to their credit, you know, they're not like the, you know, the Hyatt at the Toronto Airport, that, you know, or Houston Airport is, you know, just dying for business. You know, they have the opportunity to be selective, so therefore they are. But I think all the dates are fine. We'll get hopefully today. I've got communications back and forth with Disney today. Hopefully we'll get at least it penciled in so that we can count on.
And there's also a schedule. I'll be sending out a schedule update on Friday because we've got some one-on-one calls scheduled for next week and the week following, and sort of the outline for next year as well. So just kind of you know, stay tuned for that as well.
Yeah, and on all the one-on-one calls, what we'll do is we'll, Toby, what do you think, the next 6 months? So we'll pencil in the next 6 months, have fixed times. But if we pencil it in at a time that for some reason doesn't work for your schedule, let's make that decision by the end of the year on a better alternative fixed appointment time. And then what we need to do in the new year is, if you know a week or two out that that's not a good time, communicate directly with Bob and he'll find an alternative time. What we've had occasionally is people who no-show, and so we set aside a time for the call, and then a couple of reschedules. Jonathan, that's never been you. You're the most reliable of the group, I think. Unless we have Sean on the call, but. Sean is the most entertaining from time to time on our one-on-one calls. I think Sean has called me 2 hours early, 2 hours late, and 2 days early and 2 days late. So that's probably a record. Did that answer your question?
Yes, absolutely. That was great. What's been going on with me is I have been sort of pussyfooting around, really pushing the upgrades, and I went back and implemented all the things I implemented last year, but what I also implemented in terms of the direct mail pieces and the handouts and the decorations in the school, and what I also implemented was picking up the phone a lot more than I ever have, and just getting belly to belly with lots and lots of people and booking myself for parent-teacher conferences, you know, all night long, 3 or 4 days a week.
Good. Good.
So the good news is that's starting to pay off. I thought, okay, well, I have this many weeks and I want to sign this many people, so I'll sign 8 this week and 8 next week. But what I found is the first week you don't sign anybody up because they have to, it's a bigger decision, and it takes a couple weeks to get the whole thing done.
Yeah.
So I'm feeling a little bit behind, but that being said, it's starting to pay off. So now I'm starting to get traction. Every week people are signing up, so it's starting to accelerate.
Yeah,
it's fun.
As we discussed in Breckenridge, what I've always done, and probably more because of the staffing side of it than the student side, but always had a big deadline right before the Thanksgiving weekend, and then a big deadline around the week prior to Christmas, and building in those deadlines, if you're doing a 6 or 8 week period, building in an intermediate deadline with some reason for them to finalize by that point is very useful. So you always want to be aware of that. It's also useful for yourself because you don't want to get to that first deadline and you haven't done anything. But I think you're right. Is historically in our schools, it's been October was a month where we made sure the energy was incredibly high and there was a focus on goal setting. There was a focus on always high level customer service, but higher than otherwise, just because we were drilling it in every week harder. And then November 1st would launch the really working on the thing, and by the Thanksgiving weekend, we would probably finalize a third of the ones we were going to get done, and then the balance would happen in December. How are you feeling about the process? I mean, you've got how many people are you trying to have conversations with?
How many people I'm trying to have conversations with?
Yeah.
I've got about 80 on my list. I've had conversations with everybody on my A list, which is about 25 people. The vast majority of my B list and a small fraction of my C list.
Okay. And what have you been doing with your C's and B's otherwise?
Rephrase that for me. I'm not sure I understand.
Let me say it a different way. One of the things you want to do is, of course, your mission is to get the C's to B's, and get them to B and then get them to A and drive their attitude and enthusiasm before the thing is over. And so one of the ways to think about it is you start out the whole blitz with the instructor's mission on the floor is to fix those guys, so that you can realistically think of them as A students within the next 4 weeks. And why somebody is rated low from your own expectation is all over the board, right? Some cases, it's a child who's struggling in school, and the parents aren't terribly thrilled about martial arts class because they think maybe they should focus more on math, and they haven't seen the benefit of what we're doing yet really kick in, right? So then it's the instructor having lots of mad chats with the child about doing better in school and getting a couple of positive reports from the teacher on how much of an impact they've made in transitioning and turning to their homework or whatever it might be in the last 4 weeks. Other times it's just they're learning some new form or some new thing that they're struggling with or bored with or apathetic about, and so you've got to dangle some new interesting thing in front of them to get them excited. But the secret of high quality staff members is that they can get to the root of each of those little things and turn them around. So what you want to be thinking about is what do I do to turn the staff loose on all the B students to get them to be A students in the next 2 weeks? What do I do to turn them loose on all the C students to get them from C to B to A, by mid-December, that that's our deadline that we want to have them renewed. So how do we get that to happen? And while you're doing conferences about goals and progress, they're doing prep on highest level enthusiasm.
Okay, there's a whole piece to implement. Thank you.
There you go. Yeah, you bet. Maybe just a slightly different way to think about it.
Yeah, we obviously do that stuff day in, day out, but we haven't targeted, okay, I want you to go after these 10 people specifically. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the other piece of it is, we all do, I would hope, all of these things day in and day out. But when you, with staff especially, when you put a really high level of timeline urgency on it, and you really put a huge level of focus on it, then it changes the dynamic of what's going on, and frankly, it reminds them all of what they should be doing every day, every week, of every month. And what you'll find when you do this is coming out of it is the level of student service tends to go up quite a bit because they've now been refocused on things that they have done 6 or 8 months ago but aren't actively doing. And so it's useful from that standpoint as well.
Got it.
That's like particularly well said. You know, I think a piece of that really resonates with staff directly is, they appreciate the amount of effort that it takes to get this done, but then they see numbers too. You know what I mean? Like a lot of, I don't know how to articulate this exactly, but, so you've got these 4 or 5 staff guys, and in Jonathan's case, like 24 or 25, right? And they kind of feel like at some point that they're just kind of on the treadmill, But then, you demand from them a higher level of performance and a higher level of effort, and they resent it. But then they see results,
mm-hmm.
and it reinforces that you were right the whole time anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, just from a management standpoint, it's a useful refocuser, for everybody.
Yeah, and truthfully, that heightened level of effort, once you get them to start doing it, then they find out that it's more fun that way anyway. Is, there's nothing worse than going through your day at half speed. If you can get really everybody turned on and they're putting maximum effort into it, maximum energy into it, then you tend to create that behavior on an ongoing basis more readily, especially if you can keep recreating that kind of time urgency. It was Loretta Holbrook I was trying to think of earlier. Okay.
Yeah, her husband, yeah. Bob and I were pinging back and forth on Skype, and we're like, yeah, I think it's Holbrook.
James,
I think, yeah.
And Bob had reminded me that Mike Ziniak had some tremendous results immediately following Keystone as well. Mike, are you on the line?
Sir?
Yeah. Bob was telling me you had some immediate, impressive results relative to your past results immediately following our retreat.
I did. When I went out to Colorado, I wasn't really sure what to expect. And, I mean, I've watched some of the advanced boot camp segments on the members site and everything else, and I was saying to myself, wow, I can do that. So when I went out to Colorado, again, I wasn't really sure what to expect, and I came back with a whole bunch of notes, and I said, well, let me just do one or two things. And in the first week that I got back, I made about $4,000 on upgrades. And for me, that's a big number.
Yeah, over and above what would have been normal.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I just started my leadership program. Actually, the leadership program isn't going to launch until January 1st. And that's when, I mean, I'm telling people I've got about, I think right now, 13 people on the list that have applications for leadership. And what I'm doing is setting up appointments to talk to them one-on-one, with their parents. And I'm trying to get both parents in the room, both decision makers, like Toby said, which, of course, is a great idea for obvious reasons. And what I've gotten, though, is the new people that have been coming in the door, I'm charging a higher price. They have no problem paying a higher price, whereas before I always thought, well, I can't charge that much because my town won't let me and yada, yada, yada. And I know this seems like elementary to some of the guys on the call from Inner Circle and whatnot, but...
Well, no, trust me. It's the same conversation. Eric and I will probably agree that we've been having about their school in Houston. Is about what the price points are, what the market will bear, and the biggest thing is the belief system of the staff. And if you're a small school, it's your belief system. If you're a bigger school, it's getting the employees to believe it and not sabotage it. Because if they don't believe it, you'll tell them to go do it, and then they'll go fail a bunch of times and try to prove to you that you know they were right, you were wrong.
Right.
So good. You immediately came back and got in gear and did a big chunk over and above what you normally would have done. I know I got a little email. Jeff Smith is in, where are they at, Toby? Are they in London or Spain or somewhere? There's some big thing that they had a big martial arts deal and they wanted the original world kickboxing champion. So I think they actually got Isaiah Duenas over there too. So they've got Wallace Lewis and Jeff and Isaiah Duenas and a few other celebs over there. But he emailed me. They did a couple cash deals last night in the month. One of them emailed me a check that was an $8,000 check, and another one I think was $9,000. And you know what happens is so much of it is just expanding your thinking to recognize that that's something that can be done fairly easily. And you know it is interesting. We haven't been and aren't preaching that everybody should pay cash on everything. You want to build up a big, consistent billing and not get in trouble there. On the other hand, there's always some families that are able to present to write a check for $8,000 or $10,000 or $12,000 or $20,000. I think last year I emailed around to you guys that check that I did personally, which is for $27,800 for a family renewal. And if you expect that they can, right? If you expect that they can, oftentimes you're wrong. But you don't have to be right that way to have a big boom thing your revenue.
Yeah, you know, Michelle, jumping on that for a second. I think we're losing you a little bit too. You might want to check your headset. But yeah, I came across a quote a couple of days ago. I was reading through a book, and I can't remember exactly. It was a book of quotes, so I can't remember exactly who the quote was from. It was, my mind was mush by the time, but it was basically you know what we all know in martial arts: the thing that you don't try will never work, right? So if you believe that a round kick doesn't work, it never will, right? And it was the same deal. It was the question you never ask is always a no. Did we lose you? Maybe you lost me. I think somebody's lost. I'm not sure who it is. Is anybody there?
I can hear you, Toby.
Oh, okay. So maybe we lost Master Oliver.
I'm still here, Toby. I you know, what you were just saying, are you there?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
Okay.
That was my only point was that, you know, the question you never ask is always going to be, the answer is always no. Right? So, you know, you can't be afraid to ask the question. And I think in a lot of cases in our business, we feel such a close personal connection with our students, right, that we don't want to feel like we're the pushy salesman, right? But the reality is, you know, there are a lot of people in your school, there are a lot of people who, you know, really want to do the thing that you want them to do, and they do believe it's the best thing for them, and you better make sure that that's true, right? But the second part of it is there are always a certain percentage of the folks who, frankly, would rather just take care of it all up front instead of have payments every month to deal with. There are some people who really want to take advantage of the discounts they can get. There are some people that just really want to take care of, you know, never having to worry about it again. I mean, there's all sorts of really legitimate reasons that people would want to do it, you know, would want to pay in full or would want to do an accelerated payment plan or whatever the case may be. And it's just our positioning that we want to make sure that we give them lots of reasons to want to do it. And, you know, and what Master Oliver said earlier I think is extremely appropriate. Nobody wants to do the thing because it's cheap. They either want to do it or don't. And you have to get that decision first. Then it's how do I decide I want to pay for it, how do I want to handle it, those types of things. So I think it's particularly useful just to make sure that, you know, you're not afraid to ask the question, you know. If you don't ask, it's always going to be a no.
Yeah, but I'm back. I said my connection was weak and then immediately dropped me. So yeah, you certainly heard me say it a bunch of times, but it was the old question I was always asked by Steve LaValle, Keith After, and Tim and Dave Kovar, because, you know, I would come in and meet with them, and, you know, somebody had just written me a $20,000 check, and they would say, well, you know, how do you get somebody to write you a check for $20,000? And I said, well, it's really easy. And they said, what's that? I said, well, you have to ask. And, you know, you got to be the standing joke, because there would always be somebody, you know, somebody new would ask that question somewhere along the line, and, you know, Keith or Tim or somebody would chime in and say, I know the answer. Let me answer this one. But it's the main thing that sabotages us all, because you just never think to ask. And, you know, if you don't ask, you're guaranteed, you know, nothing's going to happen. If you do ask, you're not guaranteed you're going to get the result, but it certainly gives you an opportunity to be closer than it would have been otherwise. So you've got to just sit down and ask, ask them to do what you want them to do. And, you know, if they say yes, great. If they say no, well, you know, maybe if you didn't ask the right person, maybe you didn't ask persuasively enough, maybe you didn't ask congruently enough, or you know, there's a variety of other reasons that you might have gotten to know, but if you don't even ask the question, you know, it's I think there's a ad running right now on the radio with Chet Holmes, but one of the things they say is that, you know, the average sale gets made after, you know, you've asked for the sale the seventh or eighth time, and the average salesperson never asks for it even once. So you've got to, you know, be aware of that symptom.
Well, yeah, and again, Michelle, what I was saying, I think when you dropped off too, is I think we're all much better served. Every one of us, we're much better served to understand this universal truth. People only do anything because of their own reasons, for their reasons, and the best thing that we can do, in fact, the only thing that we can do, is just align our reasons with their reasons. Right? We can't get them to do stuff that they don't want to do for our reasons. Right? It doesn't work like that. So I remember it like it was yesterday. The first big check I ever got like that after working with you guys and, you know, kind of restructuring my thing was $12,500. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember this actually kind of built my confidence for the next, I don't know, 10 years. But when she wrote the check, she said, oh, yeah, we would rather just pay the whole thing. And I was like, okay, well, it's $12,500. And she wrote the check. And as she tore the check out of the checkbook, she said, you know what, thanks so much for letting us do this, because we do not believe in debt. We own our cars. We own our home. We do not do debt. So I'm so glad that you had an option here so that we didn't have to have recurring debt, you know? So I thought that was a really interesting thing, right? Her belief system, her value systems were completely aligned not only with what we were trying to accomplish, but her value systems, her lack of belief in debt. That was why she wanted to do it, right? That was her, you know, her decision point. Now, I never would have thought of that. You know what I mean? I never would have thought of, like, trying to use that as a lever or maximize that lever. But there are people who believe that, and there are people who believe other things, too, that are going to be aligned with what your ultimate purpose is. So, you know, they're only going to do it for their reasons, and we just have to align ourselves with what those reasons are.
Well, and the corollary to that is kind of like the, you know, the old thing, do unto others as you would have them do unto you is wrong. Is, you know, you want to do unto others as they want done to them. And the biggest marketing mistake we make is trying to market to ourselves.
Right.
And
right.
Looking
You're not
at
your
what
customer.
We would. Yeah, we're, you know, in almost all cases, we're not our customer. And, you know, and in some cases, we were our customer 10 years ago or 15 years ago or so forth. And in many cases, we can't even remember what it was like to, you know, to have been our customers. So you've got to not design your program based upon the program that you would like for yourself. You've got to base it on the program that they're looking for and the rationale that they're looking for. Well, good. I mean, if there's any more comments and thoughts. Certainly, any feedback from the retreat, I welcome it. Otherwise, we probably should wrap up here pretty quick.
I have something, sir.
Go right ahead.
Okay, it's Mike Diniak again from Connecticut. But
yeah, Mike.
Toby, you had just mentioned that the check you got for $12,000 boosted your confidence. I got to be, I can totally relate to that because, I mean, you know my position. I'm in a small school. I'm pretty much by myself. I've got a few people that are helping me out now with some things. You know, I'm developing a staff. But after 5 years, I've been at a plateau and just thinking, oh, my God, I mean, I almost closed my school down because I had no confidence left. But I figured, let me go ahead and do something here. I've got to save this place. And I called Natna, talked to Bob, and then, you know, I talked to you, Master Oliver. And then, you know, I went out to Keystone, scraped up my dimes and nickels to get out there. Figured I have no choice. I need to go out there. It'll be good for me personally, spiritually, and just to really, really learn something. I got back here. I implemented some things right away. And like I said, I made $4,000 within 1 week. You know, so I made the money back that it cost to get out there. And it seems like I have a completely different mindset now because I'm going to start the leadership program and everything, and I have a bunch of people that are interested in it. The people that I've had here for a long time, their tuition's going up a little over $100 a month, and they have no problem with it so far. And as soon as I mentioned the book, West Point Way of Leadership, you know, I mean, I had the book in my hand. I said, I'm going to be using a lot of philosophy from this book, the West Point Way of Leadership, and you know I'm prior military myself. And parents are loving it right now. Their eyebrows went up. Their jaws are hitting the floor over the program, so they're really excited about it. And so my revenue is about to really increase a lot. So my goal is to double my monthly income in the next 8 weeks, and I think it's totally doable. And if I didn't go out to Keystone, there's no way in hell that would have happened.
Yeah, you just cannot replace that level of an immersive experience. And I'm sure there's two pieces of it that are useful. One is, you know, hopefully I brought some value to the table, and Toby did, but the other piece is being in a room with people who are a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years ahead of you.
Yeah.
And seeing the trajectory that they're on and what they've done. And Toby, what's our record for the year of improvement? I know that Dave Inman said that he had doubled his growth in the last, I guess it would have been 10 months. So year to date, he had doubled what his previous year was. I know that Dave had just done 52 enrollments last month. Eric and I, you guys told me you're up a $250,000 from last year. Is that right?
Yeah, that was our number in Keystone.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think in Robert's case, he had more or less doubled in the last 12 months. If I remember correct, I don't think he's on the call either. He had gone from 4,200 to 42,000 in about 24 months, if I'm not mistaken. So I guess the best number I've heard so far is $250,000 up in a recession year. So that's not too bad. I think, you know, our Fresno school is up by about 40% this year over last year. Their traffic is up by about 300% over last year, so I'm guessing they're going to be you know, way up in the spring. But well, let's keep growing. And again, I have a couple of assignments for everybody. One assignment is a realistic assessment of where you're at, you know, year to date. And the more thorough you're keeping the numbers, the more you can go through and really review those numbers and know what your realistic assessment is. Number two is it's incredibly important to expand your horizons and set higher goals and higher expectations than you would have otherwise, and to really sit down and lay out what you want to accomplish for the first quarter, the second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter of 2012. And again, now to add $250,000 or $500,000 or more to your results next year. And really, by the first of the year, you should have a real clear outline and business plan, not perhaps in the formal sense of a bound document, but business plan in the sense of principles, values, and targets for the year. And frankly, the third thing is we want to make sure we have 100% participation in all the live events. A couple of these things, we've got to make pretty hefty commitments with some of the hosts, so we'll We'll want to get those written notes from everybody here by the end of the year. And the third thing is especially for our inner circle members, be looking for other people who fit your profile or who are doing better than you are. And let's continue to add to the top as well as add to the middle and grow both of those teams so that we have really high-quality people that are sharing with each other. And, you know, and also great diversity in the group. And I think we have pretty good diversity now, everything from Krav Maga, women's cardio kickboxing, men's MMA, and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Taekwondo, everything else. We've got excellent diversity. And the more we have diversity, the more we have new ideas from all directions.
Yeah, Mr. Oliver, I might add just one last thing before we go here is that, you know, we've been looking through 2012's calendar, and both you and I have about a dozen days set aside that we can do some on-site one-on-ones. And we're putting some packages together for anybody that might be a good fit for. If you think it's a good opportunity or a good fit to have, you know, either Mr. Oliver or myself or a combination of both come out to where you are, we have a pretty rigorous travel schedule next year, so we really have to block all that stuff out. You know, we're actually blocking it out now, so that we know exactly. I don't want to live on an airplane the whole year, but I'm certainly, you know, we're certainly dedicated to making a bunch of this stuff happen for everybody, and you know, to have us come out and do some on-site staff training, on-site consults. There's a bunch of opportunities for that, and after if it's not on the Friday email, I'm going to send everybody with all the schedule and everything. It'll be Monday. Show you a couple of different versions of how we can do that and some different, you know, permutations of what we can accomplish either on-site or out in Denver or down here in Orlando. So, just something to think about. And we'll have a bunch of information on all that stuff out to you in the next 3-4 days at the most. And
of the current team, I think the most recent one I did was Joe Berucki came out to Denver. And we did about a day and a half here. And, what has been very useful for that is kind of what Eric and I said earlier in the conversation is oftentimes the most useful thing was for me to go in, really look through the operation, and then do high-level staff training. So I had a whole series of those that I had done for a while that had been very, very effective. The other thing is often, like in a case like in Eric and I's school, is really getting a sense underneath the operation, take a look at things, find huge missing opportunity that might not happen, might not be found in a group setting or even on a one-on-one call without really seeing them face to face. So, and certainly either way is fine. What I've done a lot of times with people like Dan Kennedy is hire him for the day and show up in Dan's basement. Where we had Dan and Bill, we paid them to show up in Dan's office one time and go through everything. And each time it's been very expensive but very worthwhile. So there's a variety of value. Sometimes it's been honing in the business plan for the day. Other times it's for high-level staff training. Other times it's something's just not quite clicking where it should be, and it's having an educated eye look at it and find what the missing pieces might be. But anyway, Master Milroy, we're a little over our time, and so I think we've got to run, and I think also I have a follow-up with Paul Miller. So, Paul, if you're still on the call, I think you were going to call me. We're going to talk about some staffing issues.
Right. All right, sounds great. Thank you guys so much. It's been a great year. We're going to have a great 2012. I'm super excited about the calendar that we've got going on and what we're going to be accomplishing, and look forward to seeing everybody in February down here in Orlando.
Sounds good.
Speak to everybody soon. Bye. Thanks, guys.